Rajat, Sanjot, Gaurav, Avi, thanks for doing this. Everyone's last few weeks have been really busy, and we've been all talking to founders that we work with closely. And you know, there's a lot that we're learning from the ecosystem. We've also been sharing some of those learnings with folks on Matrix Moments. I think for this podcast, what we thought would be useful was really focusing on the last week's worth of conversations across founders in the ecosystem to really distill kind of more forward-looking insights. This is more of a compendium of sorts. So really things that we're learning across sectors with a more strategic view of post-lockdown, how the world will likely look like. I'm going to start with just a basic question. What have been each of your biggest takeaways from last week's conversations across the portfolio and the network?
I'll take a macro shot at it. I would say, sadly, I've seen a number of crises, including living through on the entrepreneurial side through them. And I would say this is the most resilient and the most objective that I have seen the founder community. There's no, sometimes one feels, I wish this hadn't happened to me. So there's a more emotional reaction. And none of us have seen a crisis of this magnitude. So to see the kind of reaction very proactively from the founder community has been very inspiring, because they are the ones, we can all sit here and give gyan and run sessions, but they are the ones who are feeling the daily pain. So it's been amazing to see that, which has translated into important actions, which I'm sure GB, Rajat, Sanjot will cover for in each of the sectors. But the ease with which that has happened, the fact that it is obvious that certain things have to be done, and that people have the fighting spirit that, we'll get through this, and we'll get through this together, and we'll get on the other side, has been quite a pleasure to see. Second thing which I haven't seen in the past is when you get hit by something like this, you are automatically on the defense, right? Survive kaise kare? How do we do that? What is the survival strategy? Very early on, there was thinking around defense and offense. How is this an opportunity? How do we make this into an opportunity? We have all spoken about, and it's been written about, that there is going to be, we had geo inflection, then we had digital usage inflection, which I think was 18 and 19. And this may be the moment that, because all of that was ready, you may see a lot of these businesses take advantage, and some of them, like EdTech, have been obvious. But that's kind of the macro view. So it's been quite interesting to see. And sectorally, I'm sure we'll get more.
So why don't they take a crack first? So I focus a lot on, retail businesses and e-commerce and marketplaces. I'd say the biggest learning from the last few weeks, unfortunately, is a stark difference between the haves and the have-nots. Right? So there is a category of essentials, and there are companies that do essentials. The good news over there, at least for the essentials categories, is that the supply chain so far has held up. So there's been enough slack, and what we see is that supply disruption is not that deep. The issue is fulfillment, right? And all of us anecdotally know about orders not getting delivered. I think that's the biggest problem that most of these companies are facing. Unfortunately, on the non-essential side, the issues are a little bit deeper, because not only are these companies not being able to service demand, from what we're seeing in terms of the US and China, demand is likely to be muted even once we get out of this lockdown. So I think that's a deeper set of issues that these companies need to solve. The good news, of course, as Avi said, is that the resilience has really come to the fore for a bunch of these founders, whether it's in terms of new categories, new distribution models, new business models. I think people are becoming very, very inventive.
I can go next. So I focus at Matrix on financial services and education. As well, Avnish said, education is one sector which has truly had its day under the sun, and we're seeing a lot of increase in demand for most segments, not all, but most segments. Financial services, especially lending, has obviously been very badly affected, right? And a lot of effort over the last few weeks has been spent by different companies to try and come to terms with it and figure out defense strategies largely. For me, two things have truly stood out over the last few weeks. One, that lending is no longer, at least in this time, no longer a balance sheet business, but it's really a cash flow business. where it is imperative for companies to match incoming and outgoing cash flows. So what does that really mean, right? So other than focusing on costs and collections, which everyone's already done, it also means taking a very, very hard look at supply. And that's been a big problem right now for all lending companies where moratoriums, etc., are not easily available. But I don't think enough steps have been taken so far, including restructuring of loans if required, selling portfolio if you can, and doing whatever it takes to survive first, right, and then thrive. And I guess the next few weeks is going to be critical for these lenders to try and manage that. The second thing is around just risk models, right? Despite whatever we say, there is an over-reliance on credit bureau and credit scores that we see across the industry. And that just doesn't make sense anymore because credit scores don't take into account future cash flows. And erstwhile safe segments are not going to be safe anymore. What do you really do when, you know, salaried employee of a blue chip company is laid off, right? How do you lend to them? So companies need to take a very hard look at risk, reassess, and reprice it. So those two, you know, big takeaways for me.
So I'll go as well. I look at consumer and consumer tech. So let me start with consumer, which is, you know, more consumer products and consumer brands. I think this crisis, to Avi's point, has been unique in kind of two ways. It's not just an economic crisis, right? I think it's much more fundamental, much more of a human crisis. What that means is, one, overnight, these businesses, no matter who you are in the consumer products world, you kind of went from 100 to zero. And therefore, there is a risk mitigation aspect to it, just survival. And then number two, I think we're seeing a lot of realignment of human behavior, a lot of changes in how we spend our money and our time. And therefore, the product market fit, which seemed to exist before, may not exist afterwards. On the first part, I think it's a lot to do just about, you know, cash flow management, having enough cash in the bank to survive and see through this crisis. So I think a lot of companies, as a step one, when they went to sort of, you know, went to zero after this, the initial lockdown, was thinking about conserving cash, extending your runways, you know, for the foreseeable future, ideally a year. That meant re-looking at fixed costs with a fresh lens, variable costs, working capital, and so on. I think to GB's point, where the distinction came in was between essentials and non-essentials, right? I think essentials here are much better positioned and in some ways are almost saying tailwinds. So these are your pharmaceuticals, staples, groceries, and so on. Especially where there's two factors is kind of what I've realized over the last week. I think if you are very, very tech-enabled or a technology-enabled essentials company, where you're going direct to consumer, you have a tech-enabled delivery aspect, I think you can actually come out of this much stronger. And also wherever you have tailwinds of health and wellness. Because I think the other thing that this crisis has done is forced people to adopt that change of you know, thinking about their health and wellness much more quickly. I think for the non-essentials, it's actually a little bit of a tougher scenario because a lot of companies need to rethink, you know, what their position might be in the new world. So it's a lot about survival and preparing for the new world. I think conserve cash to survive and prepare by sharpening the blade. You know, it could be thinking about what your customer needs are going to be in the new world and readapting to meet that need. And then very quickly, I look at media and gaming. So I'll specifically look at it, talk about gaming. I think that's the one sector among most that's really sort of shot up. These numbers are very, very preliminary. But from what we understand, I think the average time spent on a phone was about 3 hours a day before. By some early numbers, it's gone up to 5-6 hours a day. There's been a 40% surge in downloads in gaming. There's been a 21% increase in engagement in gaming. And it's not just engagement-based. Actually, spends have gone up in gaming, which is almost counterintuitive in a crisis. So I think there is some opportunity in pure play media and gaming businesses, but we can talk a little bit more about that later.
You know, I'll add a little bit on mobility. At least some of the younger companies are also, you know, thinking through how to reimagine their PMF post this crisis. And one thing that's clearly coming through on the defense side is, you know, a big focus on health and sanitization. So I think there will be an increased focus in the mobility sector around it. I think on the offense side, actually, there's a lot of encouraging thought, because in some ways, there's an opportunity to gain market share relative to other modes of mobility and other players in the market who aren't as focused on health and sanitization. And then the second thing is, I think supply was always a constraint in this market. And, you know, while there may be some impact on demand, the truth is, you know, the company that really is able to retain high quality supply is one that, you know, will succeed in the long run. And so anything that, you know, these platforms are able to do to augment supply and to augment driver incomes or, you know, partner incomes is really key. And, you know, I think Gaurav, you were mentioning that, you know, e-commerce as an industry is facing shortages with respect to, you know, fulfillment in some sectors. You know, I see some delivery companies actually thinking more seriously about how they can play a role in augmenting, you know, delivery capacity in metros at least. So I think net-net, I think reimagining the PMF and much more tighter control on supply. So encouraged to see a lot of the, you know, defensive and offensive thinking across the portfolio. I'm going to, you know, switch to the second question we, you know, were talking about the other day. I think now we have some sense of, you know, how the, you know, government is thinking about, you know, the exit strategy. There's talk of, you know, green zones, red zones, etc. What about for businesses? I mean, each of the, you know, startups or businesses that you've been speaking with, how are they thinking about, you know, their exit strategy at a very high level? And can they really return to whatever version of the new business as usual is seamlessly once the lockdown is lifted?
So I think just on this, Rajinder, one thing that I'm advising is, before we get down to the tactical exit strategy on the defense, if people have really thought through whether their PMF held or not, please have that, you know, normally when you attack a market, we talk about the thin edge of the wedge. You know, how do you go into a market? If the post-COVID world market is different across sectors. So is there a new thin edge of the wedge that you should have ready that will get you there? An example could be, you know, we have a men's brand company called Amench. Should they be making masks? Because likely masks will be required everywhere, right? So some of this plays to the strength or the offense, but I think as part of exit, focusing on the taking a real hard look, saying the PMF that was working, is that the best PMF out of the gate? Or is there something else adjacent? Is something to think about. For example, you've seen Ola has talked about providing cars for medical visits right now in the COVID world. But in the post-COVID world also, the more sanitized hospital visits, getting that comfort, that is the thin edge of the wedge. So that's one point. Second macro, before I turn it over to these guys, is my view is, earlier we had discussed V-shaped. We were wrong. Well, actually, you never said it will be V-shaped. V-shaped, U-shaped, L-shaped, right? V-shaped, we thought if things shut down very deeply for a short period of time, they will rebound very strongly. I still believe they might rebound very strongly. But two things have changed for me. One is, and I know you'll talk about China, I think it'll be very different by sectors. And second, I am increasingly wary of repeated infections. And I worry more about not just W, but a repeat W. So zigzag recovery. So I think the founders should be prepared for, as they're doing exit strategy, that it's not full on, right? We're going to come on in phases, be prepared that things might go off again, and then you have to come on, and that will also be by geography. So I think planning and thinking through that for the next 6 months or even a year is important, because if you are wrong, that's great. If you are right, then you don't want to be in a situation where you've come on full guns blazing and then suddenly you have to stop. And that stop, start, which you're not prepared for, becomes very hard.
Yeah. Go ahead, Gaurav.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would say, you know, specific to sort of commerce and marketplaces, I'll use the same framework, which is essentials and non-essentials. I think for essentials, it's relatively simpler, because honestly, the focus for most companies is to build redundancy in their logistics and fulfillment layers. because at this point of time, demand by far exceeds fulfillment capacity. I think what we'll see is that a lot of supply chains are actually subsumed by a lot of these new players, right? For instance, we're already seeing efforts in sourcing directly from farmers and delivering to Kirana stores. Right? So we will see a lot of intermediaries actually being taken out of these supply chains. The caveat here is, I think all of this is subject to supply holding up. I think there are a lot of big macro factors on supply. For instance, the monsoon, for instance, the mass migration that we've seen from urban areas to rural areas, and we don't know what impact that has on the harvesting season. And those are all watch outs for farmers. But I think the main focus immediately after the lockdown will be on building redundancy and fulfillment. For non-essential, honestly, it's less clear. Already we're seeing large demand stimulation exercises being planned by, you know, likes of Flipkart, Amazon, that have planned sale events immediately after lockdown. I do think it'll be a combination of demand stimulation, but people need to accept that demand, at least for the next 12 to 18 months, will be 5 to 50% lower in most categories than what it was earlier. And so it's a combination of, you know, going and looking at new opportunities, perhaps rediscovering PMF within small subcategories of the larger categories that we were earlier part of. But it's not an easy answer, unfortunately.
Yeah. So from a financial services perspective, I think how companies are thinking about emerging out of this. One, we've spoken about the need to reassess and reprice risk. The second part is around just, you know, what we are seeing is across the board, there is a one-time shift to digital that is happening in every segment, right? So whether it's doctors, teachers, students, professionals, mass adoption or trial of digital in some shape or form is happening. And that's going to have its ripple effect in financial services as well, right? So companies are trying to now reorient themselves from erstwhile offline focused or non-digital models to much more digital first lending or insurance or any of those models, because suddenly cost of acquisition is going to go down and you can potentially build a much, much more robust and steady business. Second, third thing on this is what companies are trying to do is be less balance sheet heavy and look to do more co-lending because banks will have cash and companies may not. And it just limits the risk and gives you a lot more flexibility and be a lot more nimble about things. Last, and you know, which is a little bit more tactical, is as you know, this moratorium period gets over, and in some sectors, 20, 30, 40% people will be would have taken moratoriums. The load on collection systems will be immense once the moratorium period gets over. So companies do need to bolster their collection systems, maybe retrain existing salespeople, existing credit people to do collections in this time. And especially if this, you know, W type of thing or zigzag thing keeps happening, companies do need to prepare and maybe multitask or multi-train people to be able to manage these ups and downs without really getting your cost structure haywire.
Yeah. So from a consumer perspective, I think I'll talk about it from two aspects. One is the business aspect and the other is the people aspect. I think from a business aspect, it's about controlling what's in your hand and minimizing risk in terms of what's not in your hand. So what I mean by that is what's controllable is your production, your marketing, and so on and so forth. And what's not controllable is how the government behaves, for example, or how the disease spreads, or how perhaps even fulfillment happens, right, if it's third-party logistics. So on what's controllable, I think it's very, very important to kind of tiptoe back into growth, right? Because of the earlier point that I made, I think cash is king more so in this environment. So you only want to produce as much as you can fulfill. You only want to produce as much ideally as there is organic demand for. And therefore, you don't want to overspend on marketing in this environment unless you feel there is pent-up demand for your segment. So be very careful. Fulfill your promise to the customer and do only as much as you think you can deliver to with 100% at that point. And then on the uncontrollables, I think in terms of fulfillment, for example, you know, if you talk to delivery, I think, sorry guys, I dropped off. Ironically, this was another uncontrollable, the work from home factor. But anyway, so my point was, I think thinking about what you can't control and minimizing risk there. Fulfillment is one aspect where you know, if you're working with a third-party logistics player, only delivering to pin codes they are servicing at that point, or liaising with the local government. You know, policy decisions happen at a central level, but execution happens at a local level. And then on the people front, and I can't emphasize this enough, especially for a consumer brand, I think safety and security, both for your customer and your employee, is paramount. Right? It means that you are taking extra precautions. For example, a bunch of our companies have constant sanitization at their factories, single file entry, separate exit and entry doors for people. Some co-founders actually aren't even coming to office at the same time so that they don't overlap. Employee insurance. And you know, uncompromisable quality to the customer, because this is really when trust matters. And finally, communicating. I think communicating is very, very important coming out of this crisis, both internally and externally.
Yeah. Rajender, I know you've got some stuff on China, and you probably want to talk about something on mobility. Just, I think, as an underlying principle of exit strategy is, what is the goal? The goal is, how do you not start with zero and be as close to possible as you were? So I would really think about, what can I do such that I can get 30, 40, 50, 60% of my business back on day one? And of course, it varies by sector, but I know it applies in mobility as well. But second, how do I navigate the likely zigzag, right? Those are the two things. And whether it is, where will you keep warehouses in consumer and stuff like that. BS, you want to cover the China learnings as well as anything else on mobility?
Yes, I think that, you know, like in many things, we do learn a lot from China on how things are going to play out. Some of the data that we are seeing from China actually is helpful. So what we're hearing from colleagues there, and, you know, reports that we're reading, is that 90% of people are back to work. And, you know, similar number are, you know, definitely heading out for, you know, essentials shopping. Linked to that, many people obviously are using shared mobility solutions. Only 65% of people, however, have visited a shopping mall, and only 35% of people have visited a restaurant. And only 30-35% of people intend to travel with a hotel stay combined over the next few months. So some sectors more impacted than others. And then finally, you know, on the supply side issues related to delivery, one part of it is, of course, just, you know, delivery boys not showing up, or delivery, you know, professionals not showing up. Another part of it is just the ability to complete deliveries without issues. And that number supposedly was, you know, only, there were 43% of deliveries that were completed without any issues in the last week. But that same number was about 18% 4 weeks ago. So only 18% of deliveries were, you know, able to be fulfilled without issues 4 weeks ago. So obviously there would have been some impact on, you know, e-commerce overall. And, you know, we just see the impact on industries as a result. You know, travel is down, you know, 60 to 70%. Metro usage is, you know, call it, you know, 40, 50% down. E-commerce is slightly down. Some sectors more impacted than the others. Offline retail is 20% down. Food aggregators are seeing actually a modest lift, maybe 5-10% lift, but China context may be slightly different. Online education, like Rajat was saying, has actually seen, you know, 1.5x to 3x on DAU, you know, 2 months out or 3 months out. And in the peak of the crisis there, actually there were 3 to 6x on DAU. For fintech, there was actually, for the month of March, for the month of Feb, sorry, there was about a 40% rise in delinquency levels. But I think that's eased out as March and April have progressed. So I think there's a lot of data that's coming through from China, which I think founders in India are also looking to. And I think there's a lot that we can learn. And honestly, I'm going to close by asking you all the last question, which is, you know, what data are you all watching? What data do you think founders should watch to really kind of navigate the zigzag, like Avi said?
So what is the takeaway from the China data?
I think the net is that once the lockdown lifts, I think people are going to go back to work. With that, you know, there is going to be some sectors like mobility, which will bounce back. But on discretionary spending, which is, you know, things like going to a shopping mall, restaurant, so some categories, that is definitely the bounce back is going to take more time. Travel is again more in that discretionary bucket. So I would say, you know, similar to the themes that we spoke of earlier, but kind of across categories. Education really not discretionary, and clear need for you know, students to study.
So it will come back as the optimism, but we have to be cautious. And also we have to remember that China did one province, only one city was locked down the way India is locked down. And one province was locked down at some version of what India is locked down. So, and the length for India is much longer. So it may take a bit longer. They didn't have in the supply chains the kind of migrant. They had migrant labor issues, but because of Lunar New Year, not because Chinese New Year, not because of this, right? So I think this may take some time to come back. But again, just I think the minute the lockdown lifts nationally, there will be a week of euphoria and things will go like this. And then there will be something that will come out about some province or something, some state where cases have spiked up and things will go like this. We should just be prepared for that, right? But I think the overall data from China is that this will take time in some of these things to come back. Coming to what data to watch, I'll give my thoughts and also on opportunity, and then we can close with everybody's sectoral views. So the red, green, blue, the government has told you the data. It's very easy. We don't. If you have five cases, you're going to be, if you don't have any cases, you'll be in green, and then you graduate to red depending on the number of cases. I think the fact that it's available on an app gives a great tool. I know there are privacy concerns all of us have. I think it's a great tool for almost a mapping of the country and knowing what is going to happen where, right? The data I would watch is, I think there will be a euphoric pent-up demand spend. I would watch data 2, 3, 4 weeks after lockdown ends to figure out what pace of bounce back has happened. And if there is a spike in infections, one should just assume this zigzag trajectory for some period of time, which, by the way, now they are even talking about in developed markets that this may go on till 2022. Net, this will go on till a vaccine comes. That's the reality. We need to suck up to it. We need to plan around it, right? But that's what I would think about. I really believe in the opportunity side of it. Everybody's market share is zero. That means nobody is a leader. That means nobody is a follower. The incumbent is no longer the incumbent. The challenger is no longer the challenger. I think the best companies will take that approach, and they will find that thin edge of the wedge to say, how do I take disproportionate market share while being cautious when things come out of this? And what is that COVID view, or just the basic thing that we have all spoken about, that digital is now going to be the next way of doing things. How do I build on that? So I think that's my overall, what I would watch, what I would be prepared for, but the macro view of what I would do.
Yeah, I can build on what Avnisha said, that, you know, market share will go to, relative market share is zero after this crisis, right? And in financial services, we saw that after the 2008 crisis also, where, you know, pre-2008, ICICI Bank used to be a very large unsecured lender, perhaps the number one in the country in the private bank space. But they significantly contracted after 2008 crisis. They just decided not to issue new cards, were very slow on personal loans. And that created an opportunity for a bank like HDFC Bank, HDFC to really come out and build a very, very large and profitable consumer unsecured lending franchise. I think similar opportunities will exist for smaller companies as well, where you will see a time with lower competition in the coming few months, and strong companies should figure out a way to capitalize on it, right? At the same time, lending is risky. We've not seen the data on job losses or true impact on businesses just yet. So I would be cautious about how I build this out, but it's best entrepreneurs, I think, will be able to manage, with one leg in each boat and managing it through this crisis.
I mean, I would say for commerce and retail, I think three pieces of data are super, super important. I think one is, as Avnish spoke about, there is, you know, red, green, blue. And so it becomes even more important in commerce, because essentially we have had mass migration, and there could be factory workers, delivery personnel who are unwilling, unable to come from a, you know, green zone back to a red zone. And I think, you know, it'd be very important to see how some of those effects play out, especially in terms of manpower. I think the second thing is that we will see a lot of categories or subcategories within large categories that actually see differences in demand pickup. For example, at least the early data that we're seeing is that derivative categories like office wear or travel accessories are probably going to be much, much more muted compared to larger overall categories. And the third thing is, as Rajat mentioned, right? So credit is a lifeblood of commerce as well. And it'll be very important to look at what the second and third order effects of credit in the supply chains and how they play out. Right? Because I do think supply chains will be completely recast. In terms of opportunities, I think two. One, Avinash already spoke about, which is everybody starts at zero. So market share becomes irrelevant. Pre-lockdown market share becomes irrelevant coming out. I think number two is at a global scale, I think what we're seeing is that supply and manufacturing is going to get increasingly decentralized, and people are going to worry a lot about concentration risk and therefore start moving manufacturing out of countries. I think that's a very large opportunity for Indian manufacturers as well as, you know, derivative commerce businesses. And I think that's definitely a trend to watch.
Yeah. So I think at a very philosophical level, I personally believe I think the way we behave will change more permanently than we think. I think no matter what the recovery time might be, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whenever the vaccine or the therapy arrives, I think it would have left an indelible mark on how consumers behave and therefore spend. So from a consumer perspective, I think therein lies both the challenge and the opportunity. So for the first time, you know, because of the zero market share issue, I think the being large is no longer an advantage, being nimble is. And what that means from a consumer company perspective, I think is a few things. One is the ability to really be closely in touch with your consumer. So I would encourage, you know, founders to talk to their consumer more so than ever, especially if there's downtime for them. Really try and anticipate how their needs and behaviors are changing, because that is what will drive your future PMF. Number two, take the time to tweak business models. I think this is a time when consumers are most likely to adapt to change. And there are very few moments in life when people are so easily, you know, adapting to change. You can see your parents, grandparents downloading apps, paying online, having subscription services, which was never the case in a country like India, especially. So those business model tweaks that one has always been trying to do, I think now is the time to do it. Number three, I think creating long-term content and brand. You know, advertising is ephemeral, brand is permanent. So using this time to build brand, especially staying connected to your consumer. And then finally, I think using this time to both to product R&D connected to, you know, what you're learning from the consumer, developing better, improved products, whether it's for health or wellness, you know, wherever the tailwinds may be, and also supplementing your team, right? I think, unfortunately, as a consequence of this crisis, a lot of folks have lost employment, which means there's a lot of good people looking for jobs. So if you are fortunate enough to see the opportunity in your business, I think now is the time to build your team as well, right? And really bulk up the team. So for me, I think it's about observing, adapting, and executing on that as quickly as possible.
Thanks, everyone. I think a lot of good advice for managing through this uncertainty. I don't know if anyone has any closing thoughts. Otherwise,
I have a closing comment, Rajendra. So I was on a chat, meaning this kind of a session with somebody very senior and somebody I respect, who had a very positive spin, maybe the wrong word, but it sounded like a spin on this whole situation for India. And the thought is the following. The thought is that first of all, we have to all agree that this is a crisis of very large proportion. And people have compared it to World War II as opposed to the Great Recession. So if it is a crisis of very large proportion, all crises of very large proportion have actually rewired the world order. and specifically World War II, you know, the whole industrialization because of World War, America, Germany, then Japan. One could argue Great Recession gave China and US the most tailwind. And the hope is that this is the one which is for us and for India. And I think we are just in the right place at the right time in a very bad way. And but coming out of it, that this is our time, this is our moment for the next decade. So that's the hope.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. And you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.